The London Bridge Sports Medicine Podcast.
Medical news, health, fitness
with Dr. AJ Seth.
Hi there. Today we're talking to Rebecca, who shares her incredibly emotional story of how spinal cord injury left her paralyzed, but then she went on to make a remarkable recovery and go on and compete as an Ironwoman. She tells us how emotionally taxing dealing with her trauma was and how she managed to go on and make a full recovery. If you have been affected by anything Rebecca talks about or want to find out more, please do get in touch to see how we can help. Hi, Rebecca.
Hello.
Welcome to Extraordinary Patient Stories. You came to see me a few months ago about a back issue, and this is sort of a long-standing back issue you had. If you don't mind, let's start right from the beginning.
I had a terrible accident while horse riding. I used to horse ride when I was very young, so I started learning when I was a child with ponies. So I was quite experienced. I took the horse out and, you know, it was some people just playing around, falling around. The horse got spook. I couldn't just hold myself to the horse when it went up, and I fell one side and the horse fell the other side. I could not move. I was found in the evening. The horse obviously went back, and my family went searching. After that happened, I was taken to the hospital, and well, you know, I spent 6 months in a hospital bed. It was test after test. In the morning, they will come and they will poke my legs to see if I could feel anything. You know, so many things went through my mind. I was 18 years old. I was preparing to go to university. And suddenly, well, all my dreams and my life was shattered. I was, you know, I could not feel my legs. I was stuck in a hospital bed. And yeah, it was really hard, you know. Tried so much, so many thoughts. Obviously, you know, you think, like, what's the point of life? But one day I snap out of it and I thought, you know what, whatever happens, there is so many things that can be done. There is so much life to be lived. And I think that, you know, that was what saved me, you know, from my own thoughts. 6 months later, obviously, I was recovering the feeling within my legs. I was sent home with a corset. So I had to wear a corset that was from my neck down to my end of the back, my bum. So I could not be up, standing up without that. So I went to stay with my parents, and, you know, they took great care of me. They will put the corset every day. They will walk me around because obviously I was still having a lot of pain. And that was my life for another 6 months. So it was a whole year of pain, discomfort, you know, so many sort of feelings and thoughts through your mind, because it's not only, you know, the 6 months that you spend in the hospital thinking that you will never walk again, was also the mentality of some people that they will see you with these sort of instruments attached to your body, and you know, the faces that they will pull and things. That was also painful. So it was the whole combination that, you know, it was hurting me at the time.
I mean, that is an incredibly horrific story, and and I think, you know, to happen at such an age, a pivotal age in your life, like you were saying, you know, you were ready to go off to university, you were ready to get on with the next stage of your life. I mean, there's so many points in that which are trauma, essentially, but the first one you described was falling off the horse and then not being found for hours. So I mean, how many hours in total was that? Was it the whole day?
I mean, I went like midday and I was found at dawn. So it was, could be in 4 hours, yeah.
Do you have any recollection of that period of time? I mean, or has that something you sort of blacked out?
I mean, that was the worst time, really. You know, I just thought, first of all, the pain that I had, it was, you know, I remember all this pain on, and even on my chest, it was so much pain. So I think that was like trying to move, not being able to move, all this pain. and, you know, started being dark. I thought, you know, I'm done. If they don't come looking for me, I can't move. I could not move at all. I was just there, lying there. And it was fear, it was getting dark, you know. I thought, God knows, animals might come, so many things.
It was
absolutely fear.
Yeah. And was it your arms and legs you couldn't move, or just the legs?
It was my legs.
So you were able to sit
my
up?
My legs. And the pain, I could not even sit myself. It was so much pain on my chest and my back.
Yeah.
So I was just, I lie flat. I can actually say this. I lie flat the whole time. I could not move. You know, my dad found me with a lot of cry, loss of tears from both of us. When he actually grabbed me, he could feel the. So I had a huge sort of bump on my back. So I remember him saying, you know, you got a big bump, lump in your back. We're going to take you to the hospital.
Yeah.
So that was, you know, after finding me, he said that, loads of tears. He was so worried. I was so worried myself. And then that was it. He just put me in the car and took me to the hospital.
I mean, even for him to find his daughter like that, in that state, unable to move his legs, he must have been so traumatized from that experience in itself. I would imagine he would have had to carry you to the car and so on and so forth as well.
Yeah, that's right. He carried me. He put me into the car and took me out of the car. The bed of the hospital came and they just rushed me. But yeah, it was. I think both of my parents are still traumatized. They very protective. They very scared. There was against me riding a motorbike, riding a bike, going in to see horses. It was like, you kind of do all of these lists of stuff.
When you got to hospital, that in itself is a whole traumatic experience, in that lots of you're very young, lots of investigations, lots of medical staff around you. What was that experience? You were in hospital for an incredible long time, 6 months. Mm-hmm. How did you feel about the care you received there, particularly this was in Spain? And is it something you now have an aversion to in terms of hospitals, healthcare, or is it something you got used to being there? Or describe how that felt being there for 6 months.
I mean, you know, on the beginning, we went to a public hospital and obviously they did the x-rays and they diagnosed what was happening. And then I was moved to a private hospital by my parents. It was a very good surgeon and doctor. And obviously they decided, you know, they had the funds to move hospitals for me. Their care was superb. I mean, you know, I will say that was the one that sometimes it was at fault. I had my, you know, up and down, and I will sometimes, you know, shout to the nurses because I didn't want them to keep poking at me. I felt like I was an experiment, you know. It was constant parade of doctors and nurses coming into my bedroom. But they, you know, they did their best. They tried everything they could. I had access to all these machines. And they were very caring and loving, you know. I think that finding a 18-year-old with this situation, they were trying to, you know, flatten up the path for whatever could happen, for the whatever outcome. And they were very caring and loving. I have no complaint at all. I think, you know, 22 years ago, they did the best they could. Perhaps, you know, it would be something that I would change. Yes, I guess that back then, mental health, it wasn't as important as now. We did spoke about this when I saw you. So I guess that at that point, they should have said, you know what, perhaps it would be the best for you to speak to a psychologist and discuss what, you know, your feelings of anger, you know, fear and everything that you're experiencing. Obviously, that did not happen. But I think that is the only thing that would change. You know, I think that would have been fantastic. It would have prevented loads of pain through the years.
Obviously, like you say, you were meant to be going off to uni. Did you, I mean, how supportive were your friends at that time? Did they come see you? Did they cry with you? Obviously they were getting on with their lives to some degree. So what was your support there?
I mean, you know, the 6 months I was in the hospital, my friends and my schoolmates came to visit me. Mm. Same as the teachers, I will study and do exams in the hospital. In fact, the teacher will sit there in the afternoon just to see me do the exam. So everyone catered, you know, everyone rallied around to show support, which was really good. I think that, you know, when I went home, that is, apart from my parents, that is one of my cousins, the elder cousin, that he actually showed very much compassion. Mm. And he realized that people just will turn around and look funny when I was walking. So he will actually come and walk with me sometimes, because obviously the doctors told me, you know, you should be walking at least half an hour, twice or three times per day to keep all the muscles. You know, I lost so much muscle mass while I was lying in bed for 6 months. Mm. So they wanted to recover that. And it was quite sweet of him. I got fonder memories of him doing that for me. It was very nice.
Just from the injury point of view, the x-rays showed that you broke a bone, one of your vertebrae in the back, in the sort of thoracic level, and there was lots of fluid around the spinal cord. But there wasn't a spinal cord injury as such, but the spinal cord had gone into shock, which is why all the nerves had gone to sleep. So how long did it take for that to go and for you to start having symptoms, for you to start having sensations in your legs and being able to move them? Was it 6 months, or did it start, was it a slow process?
No, I think it was around 3.5-4 months when I started feeling again. So it was like tickling my legs. And yeah. Then they did run some tests, and they realized that the fluid on the spinal cord has gone down.
Yeah. I mean, how was that for you, feeling again, you know?
Oh, it was fantastic. You know, I think I thought, oh my God, this is like a miracle. You know, yeah. All these tears and all these fear sort of just went away. I was thinking, oh, you know, this is a gift. I'm going to be able to walk again. It was so much joy, but not only from me, you know, my family, my parents were delighted. Mm. I think that news for the whole family was something incredible.
And was there a moment, was there like one moment where you thought, oh, I can feel something, or oh, I can move my foot or my toe?
Yes.
So there was that moment. Wow. Amazing.
Yeah, it was, I think it was like about 4.5-5 months that I could actually, I actually moved the leg. And at that time I was like, oh God, that was life changing, basically.
Do you feel that moment changed your life? Do you feel that's the moment when you thought, actually, I've got hope here, and actually I've got, you know, that there is, this is a new life, a new opportunity. I mean, when you look back in, you know, the past two decades, was that a pivotal moment?
Yes, it was. Absolutely. You know, imagine you go into the hospital and you don't feel your legs. They also said that your thoracic has been affected because of the impact, how I felt, you know, everything was pushed up.
Yeah.
And then you don't feel your legs. You've been poked day in and day out. So many doctors and nurses keep saying, you know, you need to understand the situation. Of course I did understand. I was a teenager, but, you know, deep down, you still understand what they're saying. So obviously imagine 18 years old, you're already sort of setting up your mind to say, you know what, we might not walk ever again. Mm. And then prior to that, you're just like feeling really low. It's like, what's the point to live if I can't walk? Yeah. You know, what am I going to do with my life? want to bother to actually be near me. And then when you start feeling, you know, these tickles, this sensation in your legs, and you finally move it, it's like, oh my God, you know, everything changes again. It's like, oh, you know, I can walk again. I'm going to be able to actually, you know, go back to my normal life. Nothing wrong with it, you know, obviously, I would like to stress that people who have, unfortunately, not been able to recover from these injuries, and obviously they are in wheelchairs, they go an absolute amazing life. You know, there are so many things nowadays, and it's fantastic, and they're wonderful. They go, you know, they do sport, they are amazing, they're superhumans. But they also have gone through this trauma, you know, from walking to not being able, it's a shock to the system.
Well, I think, to be honest, I mean, you're absolutely right. But actually, in your case, you didn't know. So you were being told on one hand, it's possible. And on the other hand, it could never happen. And I guess most people with spinal cord injury do have that that hope, whether it's a false sense of hope, is always difficult to say for any doctor to tell whether someone will be able to function again as they did before, let alone walk, you know. But you had to come accustomed to both those mindsets of it may happen, it might not happen, which, you know, as you say, is probably even more difficult than just knowing and just saying, actually, this is what I have to deal with. I need to get on with it. Yeah. Was there a false sense of hope as well in those first few months?
To be honest, on the beginning, I thought that it would be fixable, but obviously as the months were going by and I wasn't improving, I actually did set my mind, you know what, it's not going to happen. That's why I said, I went through that period, I thought, you know, what's the point to live? And then I thought, you know what, there is so much life to be lived, why not? You know, I can't think like this, you know, I need to get on with it. Yeah. But I did actually set my mind, you know what, that's it, we're not going to walk again. It was such a lengthy period of recovery that anyone, you know, waiting to hear good news month after month, at the end, you just lose hope.
Hmm. Well, I mean, you certainly did lead a fantastic life, you know, and you were able to pick yourself up after the injury. So a year went on. You obviously had that 6 months where you another traumatic period where you were at home, and you mentioned your parents had to put you in the corset. And again, that is bittersweet, because obviously you're out of the hospital, but at the same time, you're not leading a normal life. You are at home and you're having to be cared for. When you came out of the corset, what happened in life, and, you know, where did you pick up life, essentially, in terms of your studies, your social life, everything else?
Yeah. Well, the last day of the corset was it was a little bit funny. I did not want to come out of the corset. I wasn't feeling comfortable.
Yeah.
So, you know, they took it off and they were holding me and they were like, you will be okay. But I felt weak. I was like, oh, no. I need, you know, it was part of me. It was something that I thought it will keep me straight. I don't know. It was really bizarre. But, yeah, you know, that day the corset was taken off, and that was summer. So I just went back like as a normal person, enjoying going to the pool, going to the beach. I do remember that I did like a little excursion with my friends. Obviously, you know, it was easier to go with them and less sort of complicated at the time of sitting and stuff like that. And we went to an aquatic park. That's quite common in Spain. And I went down through one of the slides and I really got really scared. I thought, oh my God, no. I had the fear of damaging my back again. I thought, oh, it might be so soon for me to do this. Yeah. So I guess that the return to the normal life was always a setback, analyzing everything that I was doing that could impact the damage area, that could impact my back. I was really scared that I could break it again.
Yeah. And as we know, that fear avoidance behavior has persisted in some way, hasn't it? And we'll come on to that. But I think anyone listening to this will think that is completely reasonable. I mean, you've been in this core set for a year. It's been taken off. You know, you are obviously going to feel vulnerable without it. And you know, you will be analyzing any movement you do and everything you do. But, you know, you've just had a whole period where it's been huge, traumatic. Just from the getting back to ordinary life points of view, because you were very fit and active, right? As a young child, in terms of sports, you obviously know about horse riding, but you did a lot of swimming as well. Is that right?
Yeah, I was swimming for the county and for the school.
So you see a lot of, so that was a part of your life which was also taken away from you. How keen were you to get back to that? You know, were you like, you know what? Actually, I want to get in the pool. And I want to do lots of events. I want to be running. I want to be doing my normal stuff. What was the urge and the desire there?
No, I think that I had a little barrier. It was a bit like, you know, I cannot do anything. I needed time to go by. I was too scared to actually damage it. It was, I think the maximum thing that will do it would be walking. I didn't want to go to the gym. I didn't want to do weights. I think for a couple of years, I actually neglected the sporty life that I always led. It was always that on the back of my mind, you know, the fear to do a bad movement and perhaps a strain or re-broke the vertebrae. It was too much. So it was a barrier.
It was a barrier, and you were cautious. Yeah, I mean, you were over. Not, I wouldn't even say overcautious. You were cautious, as might be expected. But then, what changed, and what? Because you've obviously gone on to do great things, and for the listeners, you have competed in Iron Men, Iron Women competitions. So
yes.
You've gone back to exercise, and you've become a triathlete.
Yes.
At the very highest level. So what changed, and how did that training start coming back?
Well, you know, I did suffer another illness, and I realized that I needed to bring back myself to discipline. I needed to put my body into a routine to focus in a goal. I think, you know, when there is so much uncertainty in your life, and when it's so much fear, what might happen again, you know, suffering from this fear, what's going to happen to me? I decided, I had friends that were doing Ironman, and I started running marathons first. And then I thought, you know what? I want to challenge myself. I want to find myself again. I want to do things that I enjoy. And I thought, you know what, I'm going to go for this Ironman competition.
How old are you now? How old were you when you did your first one?
36.
Okay. So when you talk about discipline and you talk about routine, I mean, running a marathon is an achievement for anyone, to be honest. And how did you overcome, or how did you maybe not overcome, but work with the fears you had to get to the fitness where you could overrun? Because that obviously requires a lot of training, a lot of running, a lot of miles, a lot of strength work. How did you get around that?
I mean, obviously, having a coach that will assess what you can do and you cannot.
Yeah.
It was some exercises that obviously I would say, you know, I don't feel comfortable doing. I broke my back, and please, can we find some alternatives?
Yeah.
Obviously, when it came down to upper core, you need to do weight. So my coach was always with me, behind me, helping me with the weights, something that I felt comfortable with. He won't actually push. And I guess, you know, I did do so many miles. with the bike and running. I think the bike leg is the one that was the most worrying. Obviously, you know, that brought me back to my back injury so many times, because obviously the doctor at the time, when I was discharged, he kept saying to me, you know, you need to be very careful. Any impact could damage your back. So it was always playing on the back of my mind. I was really aware when I was cycling of, you know, trying not to crash or anything that serious, because you never know the way that you will land. And that caused so many arguments with my parents. They didn't want me to cycle. They didn't want me to have any exposure to be able to crash and perhaps damage my back again. On the beginning, you know, they didn't approve the type of the sport that I chose.
And again, that is understandable, particularly if you're pushing yourself in these competitions. Cycling is always a bit of an unknown entity, particularly on race competition. You know, people are really going for it, but at the same time, you were doing this for you, and you felt comfortable enough to cycle and to push yourself. So I think having the coach is obviously has been key in terms of giving you that structure and giving you that program. And what did you feel that you were having to push your boundaries sort of every week or every month, or was it just a little bit further? And were you always in the fear factor, or, you know, did you go through many years just feeling comfortable and saying, actually, I'm really enjoying this, I'm having a great time?
I actually think that, you know, when you start cycling and you start racing, if you like the, you know, this sort of adrenaline rush, actually makes
that's,
you forget.
That's got to kick in. That's got to kick in at some point, right? You know, everyone knows when you're on a good run, hard cycle, you feel great, right? And you think, actually, I want to go. So, so I guess you were balancing that feeling with potential fear. So you know, did the eventual adrenaline rush take over?
Yeah, it does. It actually, you know, the adrenaline rush make you forget about your fears when you are in the boat. You just go, you just enjoy the, you know, enjoy the speed and enjoy passing other people. I mean, I'm not gonna lie, there are moments in Ironman where when I'm exhausted and you know, that time I go back to the past, I replay in my mind, you know, things that the doctors have said. It's like visiting what has happened, and then you just click and you say, you know what, no, did not happen, it's not happening, and we're just going home. And you just, it's like another rush of adrenaline coming through and saying, we're going home.
Yeah, amazing. And you have a lot of time to think, don't you, in these competitions, particularly Ironman, a lot of time on your own, a lot of time just to play with your own mind.
Yeah.
So you mentioned earlier about the mental health side of things, and obviously, we're talking about 22 years ago when the injury happened, and mental health itself wasn't on the radar as much. How much do you think your coach helped you from a mental point of view, or do you think you would have benefited from additional support and understanding and addressing some of these fear issues that we've discussed? And even the trauma of the accident. I mean, what are your thoughts about that when now you look back?
I mean, my thoughts are, if I had a psychologist and I had someone who actually could guide me, I could have organized my thoughts at the time. I could organize my fears. And I would have overcome this, you know, long time ago. As a matter of fact, one of their fears, it was to be near horse. For years, I was petrified, mortified. I could not bear it. And then I went to Belgium a couple of years ago with my husband, who is a professional cyclist. And we were just next to a stable. And, you know, that was the first time that I actually was capable. Imagine, like, 19 years gone by.
And horses and were a big part. Horses were a big part of your life, right? Growing up. Yeah.
I will do horse riding like twice or three times a week. So it was something that we did quite often.
Mm.
So 19 years with this fear, and then I saw these horses. I was able to touch them. Every morning I will pop just next door to pet them and you know, to see them.
Mm.
And 2 years ago, my parents bought a horse again. And that was a passion of my mother.
Mm.
So it took them, I deprived my family of loving horses for such a long time.
Mm. And we've talked about that there is, understandably, an element of guilt on your side, right, from that, because you know the horses were a big part of their life, and I think in situations like this that the mental health support should be for everyone. It should be for yourself as the patient, but it also should be with family members, and now what's available is sort of group counseling, group therapies. And is exactly how you put it. It's about organizing thoughts firstly getting insight into how you're thinking and how you're feeling, and then getting out into the open. I can understand sort of generation gone, Spanish culture is pretty stoic and in terms of addressing mental health and in terms of addressing pretty, you know, similar to the UK, to be fair. Addressing mental health is not on, you know, top of the priority list. Have they had any thoughts about that or insight, or have they dealt with it in their own way? Are they in a better place now?
I think that they are. I mean, I think, you know, obviously they quite open about therapy, and I think I should organize something, because despite that they are happy now and they're more cheerful about the situation, you know, every time that I say I'm going to race, or when I actually did a horse ride in front of my parents, they bought a horse, they were mortified. Mm. You know, it took them like 15 minutes shouting like, what are you doing? You know, calm down. Oh, no. Mm. To be at ease and take pictures and be happy.
Mm.
So I think, you know, for them, it will be good to understand the injuries is already healed.
Mm.
And, you know, this is a space for you to talk about the pain, about all your feelings, especially my dad. I think, you know, he's bottling up everything that he went through because he found me.
Mm.
You know, I think that for him is the hardest. Imagine the horse goes back and you don't see your daughter.
Mm. It's horrific.
And when you find that she's, you know, on the floor and unable to move, is I think for him, you know, he will definitely need it.
Mm. So I mean, yeah, I mean, these things stay with us for a lifetime, right? So I think it is always work in progress. There's always work to be done physically, mentally. How did when you came to see us in the clinic, we you know, we assessed you, we did an MRI of your spine, and actually the MRI, I remember showing it to you, because that in itself must have been difficult to see, because it's the first time you'd physically visualized your spine for, you know, a long, long time. So yeah. It's the first time you'd physically visualize your spine for a very long time. So how did it feel to see the spine?
That was hard to actually look at it. I had so many sort of visions in my mind, and it was nothing of what I actually expected. In fact, it was nice to see it and nice to have the chat with yourself and being explained how it healed and, you know, what has happened. It gave me a completely different vision of my injury, which reassured me, you know, you can actually have a normal life, you should embrace doing more things that you are not doing at the moment, due to fear. So that was, I think that was one of the best things that I've done. I wish I did it earlier, to be honest.
Yeah, and just for the context behind it, I mean, the spine looks great. You know, it looked like a really, really healthy spine. And you could see where the fracture had happened, but there was no other issues. That, you know, the spine, the discs looked great. The spinal cord looked great. There was no issues with it. And I think, you know, often when you show patients MRIs of spine, you are, it's a very powerful tool because it's matching up what they have in their mind as what, you know, what the conception of what a spine, where spine looks like compared to what it actually looks like. And I think I said to you, you know, if I have that spine, then I would have been, you know, over the moon. So, so I think that's an important step. And I think it's getting the right medical help and psychological help, as early as possible. So, I mean, just to summarize then, Rebecca, tell us what you think you're looking back and everything that's happened. What are your main messages for anyone who's going through something similar? And what do you feel you still have to improve on?
Well, my messages are, you know, when anyone is going through uncertainty with any type of illness, I think that, you know, they need to find a way to discipline their mind, because it's all in our mind. We are the ones creating the barriers. We are the ones creating the fear. And we let these feelings lead our thoughts, and that causes the problem. Never let them win. Never let these thoughts win. Always try to get the best of yourself. You know, try to find a routine, try to engage with others. It's always hope. And, you know, it's always hard work that is going to need to be done. And the sooner that people react to this and gets with their routines and with their physios and with any tool that might be given to them, it's key. It's key to improve. And what difficulties I'm finding at the moment, well, you know, I think it's been 22 years of fear, 22 years of replaying the, you know, the voices of the doctors, the messages that they were saying. And, you know, it takes toll on you. It's tiring. So despite seeing, you know, the situation of my spine right now, I think it's still that little bit of fear of, shall I do weights? Shall I not? I'm scared to do any upper work. But I think I need to get on with it. You know, I need to control that thought and say, you know, no, we got to check. We need to park that and get on with it. So I think I still got some work to do to control that fear.
And having support is key, isn't it? The right support, that, you know, from a physical, mental, medical point of view.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I always thought that the sport will be what will help my pain, you know, all these memories and all this pain that I went through. It did heal a part of it. Obviously, you know, when you're replaying it through the races with all the time in the world that you got in these races, you fix a little bit of yourself. But there is another aspect that, you know, you need professional help.
That's an amazing concept, that actually you are self-healing during the training, during the events, you know. But you are right. It is definitely a combination of that. And exercise goes a very long way to do that. But it's recognizing when you need the support. I mean, Rebecca, I think everyone listening to this will be able to hear how emotional this has been for you, and what an how brave you are for not only just coming to talk, but for dealing with everything and dealing with things as they go forward. So I guess it's really just to say thank you so much. I realize it's been difficult to talk about this, but I think lots of people will have lots of amazing insights and confidence, really, from your story of about how you can change injury and illness around.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to LBSM's Extraordinary Patient Stories. We really hope you enjoyed listening. If any of the topics discussed are relevant to you or you want to find out more, please get in touch by phone, email, social media, or visit our website. Thanks again, and see you soon.